Hi, I'm Christine Ming Ming Garner. I grew up living in fear, raised in a doomsday cult. They taught me I would die at a young age, that I would never graduate from high school, college, have a family, or a career. In the years since my escape, I've been learning to overcome the fear and living my life with the purpose and by design. I'm a wife, a mother of three, an entrepreneur of a seven-figure business, and I'm on a mission to guide people to overcome their fears, to live a life of fulfillment as I have done. This is The Fulfilled Life with Ming Ming. Welcome to The Fulfilled Life with Ming Ming. This is where I get to interview business owners and entrepreneurs about how they overcame adversity to now live a life of fulfillment. Today, I have the great opportunity to chat with Doug Swanson. Doug, I've known him for many years. He owns an amazing, reputable business here in town called Bill's Bike and Run, and we've had the privilege in our security company to protect that business. And he's just an amazing part of our community here in Idaho Falls and southeastern Idaho. And so I really wanted to bring him on here so that we can know a little bit more about him. And so Doug, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And Doug, I know that you do so much more than what I'm even aware of. I know you own multiple different businesses, things like that. And you're highly involved with coaching youth and things like that. So tell me a little bit about what your life looks like today.
Okay. Well, it's a lot simpler this week, last week. So I own Bill's Bike and Run and Swanson's All American Sports. I'm partners in those businesses with a friend of mine. We're also on the Alley in Rigby, which is an athletic facility and personal best performance, which was Michael Hayes's, is now Live Forward. So, like, you know, the Run for the Cure, the Run to Raise to Feed the Hungry, and the triathlons we passed up on this year, but we started doing, so we do a lot of other events too, like that, a lot of 7-on-7 stuff and different events in the community. So I do that. I am president of Upper Valley Grid Kid Football, which is a 54-year-old nonprofit youth football organization that runs from Firth, Idaho to Teton, Idaho. We just had our championship last Saturday. We had 100 teams this year, about 2,400 players, about 550 USA certified coaches. I've been doing that for I think 13 years is where I've been doing that. But I played in that league when I was a kid in this town growing up. And then obviously, Bill's Bike and Run and the team sells over at All American. I spend a majority of my time working at those stores.
That's awesome. That's so great. Well, thank you so much for being such an amazing asset to our community.
Yeah, I'm grateful to live where we do. We're lucky.
I agree. I completely agree. So tell me about the messy parts of your life, Doug, on your journey to get to where you are today.
Well, I don't know if we have enough time, so I'll speed version through it a little bit, maybe. So obviously I grew up here. I'm the youngest of six. My mom and dad just probably didn't have the best relationship, you would say. But it was different for me. I was so much younger than my siblings. I don't remember living in same house as my oldest, even my oldest, really the only brother I even remember living in the same house with is one just older than me, Gordon, and he's quite a bit older than me, 7 years older than me. So, I mean, things were really rough with my mom and dad when my older brothers and sisters were little, but I didn't get to experience any of that, really. I was raised in a home. My dad worked hard and made good money. We lived in a nice homes, and we drove nice cars, and my dad was important to me and good to me. Our relationship was built through sports.
Sorry, Doug. I'm going to have to edit this part out because I think your internet is not great when it comes to video. So I think what we need to do is just turn off the video. So I won't use the video portion of this. I'll just use the audio portion of it, and that'll be great. But let me go ahead and stop my video, and then if you'll also press stop on your video, and then let's start. Let's start back where you were talking about. You said your parents. Okay, so wait, you're gonna need to stop your video so that you're not using up your internet speed.
Oh, I thought I did.
Okay, perfect.
Well, there we go.
Okay. So
yeah, I hear you good.
Okay, great. So basically where it started cutting out is before you started talking about your dad, you talked about your siblings and how your closest sibling to you was 7 years.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after that, you started talking about your dad and your family life.
Okay.
So if we'll go ahead and get started right there.
Okay. So my dad and I pretty much built our relationship because he worked so much and him and my mom never really spent a lot of time together that they weren't, yelling at each other. So my relationship with my dad was built through sports. My dad was a sports fan. I loved sports from the time I was little, and I played every sport I could play. And I was good at it, and it really built my relationship with my dad. And so it was always weird for me to listen to my brothers and sisters talk about the relationship with our dad and, him being physical with them and him not being a great dad. And, for me at the time, I thought he was a great dad. He, supported me in all the sports, always would, sponsor our uniforms and he was at every game and he was proud of me and that's how we built our relationship. Probably about the time I got to junior high, my dad had a massive heart attack. My mom had never worked a day in her life. And the heart attack changed my dad's life, especially financially.
Wow.
As much money as he made and worked, he wasn't prepared for not making money and not working. Our life changed dramatically as far as, where we could live. We lost our home and lost most of the stuff we owned and had to move into a smaller place, which really, I don't know that it bothered me that much. It was awkward to explain to my friends sometimes,
Yeah.
But that obviously, really at that point, it's probably the first time in my life I realized the only thing that was keeping my mom and dad together was finance, was money, That's how their rules live. Their relationship continued to deteriorate even more.
That's stressful. That's really stressful to go through.
Yeah. I was getting old enough to be able to start making some of my own decisions and school was becoming more important. I was in much more need of a parent that was a responsible parent as far as holding me accountable and supporting me through things that I didn't like to do, algebra, mystery.
Yeah, homework.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that was probably the first time in my life that I probably started to get on a little bit of a different path. Mom and dad's relationship continued to deteriorate there for another couple of years. I started drinking as a young teenager.
How old were you when you started drinking?
I think 14 when I started.
Wow.
And at that point, it was just like a fun thing on the weekend or whatever with friends but it increasingly, I certainly learned at that age that that drinking and was an escape from reality. Like, didn't have to listen to my parents, hating each other and threatening each other, and it was, I didn't have to think about school. I didn't have to think about, that's what drinking at the started out for me, is to understand that it was an escape.
From reality. How did you perform? I mean, how did that affect your performance in sports?
Got worse and worse. And my sophomore year, I went to a practice, which is kind of funny. I got invited to practice with the varsity football team, and I had an incredible day, unbelievable day. And coaches were super excited. And I went in the locker room to change that day. And I started thinking about, like, the pressure that was going to come with that, to perform all the time and to be that guy. And I'm not even joking, in a 5-minute period, I just made my mind up, and I cleaned my locker out, and I went in and turned it in to Coach Nebaker, and I quit.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you quit sports?
Sports. Yeah, that day. It was like, was done.
And how old were you at this time?
15 years old.
Wow.
And so I just didn't want to deal with, like, real things and pressure and accountability. I was scared to death of that stuff by that point in my life, for whatever reason. So a lot of friends were mad at me, and I lost a lot of friends, and good friends obviously were like, oh, you know, it'll be okay, you'll come back next year. And it was all that kind of stuff. But that's when I pretty much, things started really change for me. I didn't care about school at all. And of course, my things at home were such a mess. They didn't care. I didn't care about school either. They didn't know whether I went or didn't go, or whether I was getting F's or what. You know, there was a disaster there. And I think they started realizing I was drinking. I'd come home, fall downstairs and things like that. But again, things were too crazy in their life. It's just how it was. So
did your parents stay together through your teenage years?
The next summer, I had a bunch of friends over at the house. And my dad came downstairs and said, what are you guys doing today? And I said, well, we're not doing anything. We're broke. And he took a $50 bill out of his wallet and gave it to us and said, why don't you guys go do something fun? So probably about my 5 or 6 best friends were with me, childhood friends I grew up with. We jumped in the car and took off. And when I got home that night, all my family was at my house, which we didn't even have Thanksgiving dinner together. So I knew something was up. And so my dad had gave me that $50 when I left the house. He went out in the garage and took his own life. So life got really complicated then. That's okay. So life got super complicated then for me. Obviously, my mom had never worked in her life. Obviously, there's no insurance. We were broke from rundown before, so there wasn't any kind of savings thing or nothing. And so I quit school and went to work, and they moved me and my mom into a low-income apartment complex. And that's when my life really started to ramp up with drugs and alcohol.
Oh.
So I was just the path I got on. It was pretty destructive. At some point during that time, I committed to other crimes, besides the fact that I got heavily into drugs as well. And that's pretty much what my existence was then, to make enough money to drink or do drugs. And I stayed with my mom for about another year or so before I went out on my own, whatever. She'd obviously been married forever, and I think she somewhat was enjoying her freedom that time of her life.
Yeah.
My mom was never bad to me by any means. And really neither was my dad. I deal with kids all the time now that are in abusive environments or different environments. I never had any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They just weren't capable of being parents.
Wow.
So
how did you get clean? Because obviously today you're from what I know of you, you're very sober.
Yeah.
And you're so passionate about helping kids.
Uh-huh.
To be involved in sports. And I can see it. I can see it now. I'm making the connections.
Right.
But I want to hear from your words, like, when did you recognize that you had a gift to help?
Oh, geez. Well, kids? I would love to tell you I was smart and recognize that on my own, but sometimes you have to go to jail. Sometimes you have to do some bad things to get to the bottom of the barrel. And it took me a couple times, Christine. I got in trouble. I think the first time I got in trouble with the law, I had been at a party somewhere, and I actually stole a gun from that party. Then I took it to the pawn shop and sold it so I could have money. And that was like the first time I had really had a real run-in with the law. It got me put on probation. And that didn't keep me clean and sober very long. I just faked it, lied, did whatever I had to do for a while, and then I finally just stopped showing up to probation situations and pretty much just kind of lived kind of on the run. At that time, I was, only money I would make was whatever drugs or I was selling or whatever.
Wow.
So I did that for really hard for a couple of years. By that time, some of my older siblings, certainly, even though we didn't have much of a relationship, they obviously cared about me, and they tried to interject it in my life a little bit. But pretty much anybody interjected into my life at that point, I just took advantage of them and used them for whatever I could. Which obviously even lessened our relationship as brothers and sisters, right?
Yeah.
So
how do you get clean? I'm like so enthralled, but I'm like,
wow. Obviously I did that for quite a while, enough that when they finally found me that time and caught me, my probation officer told me it was the longest he had ever chased somebody. And, and they put me back in county jail and told me that I was going to go to Cottonwood on a rider, like a 120-day rider thing. And so it was probably, that was rough jail time too, because I was, at that point in my life, I used drugs every day. And so detox and things like that, like they put me in solitary for a few days and because I had not been without drugs it was brutal.
Wow.
So probably maybe 60 or 70 days into that time in jail, I wrote a letter to my mom. And I told her how sorry I was for all the things that I'd done and all the chaos I'd caused in her life. And she took that letter to my probation officer. And he just came in to see me one day.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't know why, but I'm going to give you another chance.
Wow.
And they moved me into a halfway house where I did an in-treatment drug facility again and was living in a halfway house there.
Wowzers.
Right. And then first chance, I probably, I was going to meetings. I was court ordered, obviously. I was going to meetings. I met some pretty cool people in those environments. That had similar stories to me, made some friendships, and spent better half of probably 3 years clean and sober. And
wow.
Yeah, came out, went to work, things seemed pretty good, and was certainly out of any trouble with the law and was living normal again. And as anything in life, like as life gets more complicated and you take on more, things get more stressful. I found myself right back to the same spot and went out with a friend one night and used a little bit. And I was just right back on the road again.
Wow. So how long did you go for on this stretch?
A couple years. But I was lucky that first time that I got clean and sober, I made some friends that were in that part of life that still believed in me and hung on to me. So when I got to the bottom of the barrel, I made a phone call and he came and got me. His name was Rick, and he came and got me, and I basically started over there again. And
wow,
did a little good.
Wow. At
this time, I ended up living with him for quite a while. In fact, she was a waitress at Smitty's, and we would go in there to eat lunch, work every day. I was hanging drywall for a living and really was just trying to work and go to meetings and keep my crap together. And she was probably the biggest change in my life because for whatever reason, she just believed in me and she hung on to me as much as I tried to push her away. And so obviously here we are. Like, before she had two kids when I met her, we had two together, and she's been putting up with my crud for a few years now.
So how many years have you been married to her, Doug?
24.
Oh, wowzers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute. That's awesome. Wow. That's incredible. Okay, so when did you get involved with helping the youth with sport?
Well, I just when Tanner, my Austin, my stepson, I coached him in a little bit of ball, but Moore was more like a parent and watching him. He played baseball and football and basketball, and I coached a little bit and helped. And then we had our first son together, Tanner.
Mm-hmm.
And Tanner was just like me when I was little. Like, he loved, like, he just wanted a ball in his hand all the time, right? He slept with a basketball when it was basketball season. He slept with a baseball, slept with a football. He wrestled. It was awesome for me. I loved it, right? And so started coaching him in, like, flag football and stuff like that. And then when he became a fourth grader, I signed him up for Grid Kid, and I got a phone call, and they're like, "Hey, we don't have any coaches. Would you coach?" And that's how I got started. And so I started coaching, and I was horrible too, by the way. Like, I was like the worst Grid Kid coach in the world that year, right? Like, we didn't play very well, and I was hard on myself, and was hard on my kid. Was like awful. I didn't sleep. I felt like a big jerk all the time, right? Yeah. So from there, I become hooked to it, and I obviously started meeting other kids, and you start meeting kids that remind you of you when you were little. It reminds you, like, when practice gets over and no one shows up to pick them up.
Oh.
And it's dark outside and you're waiting with them, you know?
Yeah.
And you, end up putting them in your car and driving them home, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I started meeting kids like that. And, it was just felt like I owed something there. This is how I felt. I was like, it's just, yeah, like, this is something I can do to pay back.
And I'm hearing the love that you have in your voice, and the love that you have in your heart for what you do, and the purpose. You know, there's so much more purpose behind coaching a child in sports. There's, like you're talking about, like, you're being an advocate for that child and somebody that they can rely on. So
that's the best. Yeah, for sure.
So I'd love to know, okay, how long have you been coaching?
I think that was 15 years ago that when I started as a coach like that. So I coached that team for a couple of years, started getting involved with the league. I was working hard in my career. I was doing well. We were starting to do better financially as a family, and certainly went through plenty of hard times together like that. We're doing better. So I just wanted to do more. I reached out to the league about fundraising and kind of started that process. And they asked me to be an area director of Skyline, and I did that. And we did some awesome things. We kind of changed the fundraising world and what we could do for the kids. We reworked use agreements with the districts for better facilities, and we started plugging along. When Tanner got done, when Tanner was an eighth grader, the league came to me, asked me if I would be, like, vice president of the league, and I took on some more of that stuff, just more responsibility, scheduling and things like that with the league. And then that next year, the president of that league, of the league, resigned, and I took that spot, and I've been chasing that ever since then. We've made some good progress there.
That's awesome.
You know, yeah. Talking about this now reminds me of how I actually first met you. And this was, I don't know, maybe like 2012 or something. I think you were working for Teton at that time, right?
You needed a truck for the 4th of July parade.
That's right. And you guys lent a truck.
You needed a truck.
Yeah, because at the time we were broke as a yoke and we were driving like a Toyota Solara, and my husband was driving like this beat up like Jeep that needed to get jumped every few miles. And I was like, well, we could totally like throw some candy in the parade and, you know, like out there.
I put you in a sweet Tundra too, huh?
Yes, you did. It was red. I can't believe you remember that, Doug. You are good, because I know that we're not the only ones that you lent out trucks to. But thank you. Thank you for helping us get our start many moons ago.
Awesome.
My commercial security company. But I know that you, when it comes to fundraising, you guys gave away cars and all sorts of goodies.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, I met Mario because I coached his kid in football.
Oh, cool.
And yeah. And so every year I obviously go to Mario, be like, okay, I'm buying the kids helmets. I'm buying the kids shoulder pads. We need a new lawnmower. We need to build an equipment shed. And his kid played for me. Connor played for me. He was Tanner's age. So I'd kind of build a relationship with him. And Mario was always, he would always give me ways to earn money for the league. He wrote me plenty of checks too, just on his own, but he always wanted the kids to earn it. A lot of times when he was having a sale, like we would run the concession stand and my kids would cook burgers and deliver burgers out to their customers and all that kind of stuff. You know, we kind of build a relationship that way. And he would, every year he'd be like, Doug, you should come work for me. And I'd be like, yeah, who wants to be a car salesman? And I worked for Quest at the time and was doing really well. Did a lot of training. I would do a lot of sales training. I would take like salespeople that were struggling. It was a union environment. I take salespeople that were struggling to reach their goals and were under performance management, and I'd get to coach them and work on them and get them reaching their goals and making money. And it was fun. I enjoyed it.
That's awesome.
It was a good job.
How did Mario convince you to join them as a car?
Well, my CenturyLink bought Quest, right? And my job description turned from the guy that was supposed to be helping people get better to the guy that was supposed to performance manage people out of the business. And I hated it. Sucked. And so finally one day I just said, well, I'm interested. You know, tell me what you're thinking about. So he at that point said, well, Doug, I'm thinking about this business development center. There's my buddy Jim Parker that runs Toyota dealer in Coeur d'Alene has this business development center, and you know, I'd like you to go down there and visit him and see what you think. And so I went to Coeur d'Alene, spent some time down there with pretty much a world-class car dealer, the Parkers, who own multiple dealerships there through Coeur d'Alene and Spokane, and his family's legacy in that community. His support was unbelievable. And I got to meet and run this business development center. Well, my mind just raced a million miles an hour of the things we could do and things we could improve and how we could change things. And I was excited about it. And I came home and met with Mario, and away we went. So
that's so cool.
Yeah. And he was unbelievable to work for, and not a harder working person in business that I've ever met. And I learned a ton from him. So as we grew and came along, you know, then we started talking more about grassroots marketing and, you know, and trying to invest more money in the community, arts, culture, education, you know, obviously things like the rodeo and fair and all those kind of things. But But like that just fit me like a glove too. So I started taking a lot of that stuff on, and it's just kind of how it grew.
That's awesome.
Together. Yeah.
So how did you make the transition from that position to, buying Bill's Bike and Run?
Well, that was kind of wacky for sure. Car business, I will tell you, if anybody doesn't know anybody in the car world, those dudes work hard. It is a grind, and you never can remember what you did the day before. It starts over every day. So after so many years of that or whatever, I'm certainly starting to feel like a change. And my youngest was graduating from high school. Our life was getting simpler. And so I had some opportunities come up that weren't the bike shop, that were just with some friends of mine, idahosports.com and some other stuff like that, that would get me involved with even more sports, more high school stuff. And so I originally made the transition to do those things. And I, after about a month, Gary White called me. Gary White is who sold Mario, he was a car guy. And he, after he owned Monty White Motors and owned St. Anthony Motors and owned those, when he retired, he bought the bike shop for something to do because he couldn't not do anything. And so we had built a relationship like that. Like, we did a lot of co-sponsor stuff with him at Bill's when I was at Toyota. So I kind of built a relationship with him. He's called me one day and said, "Doug, I'm 70. I'm tired of the bike shop. You know, will you come look at it?" And I said, "No, I'm not interested in a bike shop. I don't know anything about it." And he said, "Oh, it's bullcrap, Doug. You know everything about it. It's just about building relationships with people and running a business. You'll be just fine." So he talked me into it, and I came in, and I spent a year here working on it, I-99, looking at the books, and the rest of that is history too.
Yeah.
And during that time, obviously, we're winter slow in the bike business. We were looking for something to supplement, help keep employees and make some extra money in the winter. All American Sports come along, which I certainly have been in Idaho Falls same since it opened in 1977. Every year would save my money to go buy my cleats there. It meant a lot to me, and the opportunity came. And so that's kind of how that came on board too.
And, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking about your story, and I just think it's incredible how sports has played such a crucial part in your life. And I'm wondering, what have you thought about what your life would have looked like or been different had you stayed in sports as a child?
A lot, sure. Yeah. Yeah. When I was young, I thought about it a lot, could I have went and played or all that stuff, certainly, I don't know, as you get older and wiser, for sure. I wouldn't trade anything that I went through. I learned a lot of hard knock lessons that I've been able to help other people with along the way. Things worked out, but I certainly thought about it a ton.
Yeah.
What would have happened?
But
I will tell you this, that it takes a kid to have the right home too. Like, you just walk, when you walk out on the field somewhere and you see a kid that's a good athlete, and you think it's just that simple, it's certainly way more complicated than that for a kid to go play college ball. There has to be he has to have a well-rounded life, understand the education for it, have parents that certainly love them, but are hard on them and hold them accountable. And that when a kid goes and plays sports at the next level, there's way more involved than he was just a good football player. Pretty special kid, and his family as well.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it that deeply, about how involved a whole family or parents need to be in holding a kid accountable in order for them to really experience that level of greatness in their talent and in their skill. So that's really neat. I'm curious, what's your favorite part of being a coach, or what is the part of coaching that brings you the most fulfillment?
For sure, without even a shadow of a doubt, it's to watch kids build relationships and a second family that they can lean on, they can laugh with, they can cry with, it's truly a brotherhood. When you take kids that do it together from the time they're, you get kids that get on it, you go watch the little flag football team, and they're 5 years old, and you look at them running around out there, and you think that's super cool, and it is. But then when you get to watch them come all the way through youth sports and junior high school, and you get to be in a locker room with them, and you get to watch how many times they impacted each other's lives in a way that they needed each other and made their lives better and impacted people, their family members. And it's way, way more than a game. Way more.
Yeah. Well, it's obvious to me that, you know, friendships and that particular friend of yours you were talking about when you were trying to get sober again, how that was he was a big source of support for you in a pivotal moment in your life.
Yeah, I would.
So what
would have to say, probably saved my life. I'd have to say, yeah.
Wow. What would you say is the most difficult part about being a coach?
Well, nowadays it's hard because parents have a different outlook on kids facing adversity than they used to. I don't know exactly the reason why it is this way. But parents struggle having their kids learn hard lessons, responsible lessons. They want to take on things for their kids that their kids don't enjoy doing. So it makes it hard to do, as a coach now, to work in that scenario. And I shouldn't just say all parents, but I would tell you, I would easily tell you the majority of parents now, which they just love their kids. Is love their kids. I'm certainly not faulting them. But for whatever it is, the generation, the world we live in now, parents struggle to let their kids learn lessons and figure out things on their own. That makes it hard for a coach.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, I've heard the terms, you know, like helicopter parenting and lawnmower parenting. Is that what they call it? Lawnmower parenting?
I don't know. There's plenty. I don't know. It's funny. I deal with a ton of that stuff. I deal with all the escalations and playing times. And there's always, it's always funny to me because the parent just loves their kid.
Right.
And they just think that he or she's being treated unfairly or something that they don't like, you know. And like that generation changes so much, you know, like my relationship with my dad was so sport oriented and that's what we shared together. But I would have never said, hey, guess what, dad, coach made me run some extra laps or play a position I didn't want to today. I would have been terror. My dad would have broke his foot off in my tail end, right?
And you would have taken it like a champ.
Yeah, that's right.
Taking it like a champ.
Yeah. But that stuff's different now. So it's hard for that makes it hard for coaches now. But that being said, it's still 100% worth it. You get to see kids that find a place that they feel comfortable in. They get to be a part of something that took a lot of hard work, a lot of adversity, a lot of things that they didn't like to do, and they get to put it together. I don't know, my opinion, life lessons that a kid will take to any job or into the Army or wherever they go, and they'll be able to take those things that they learned through those processes, and they'll be better human beings for it.
Yeah, totally. Doug, I feel so privileged to interview you because I know we've known each other for close to a decade, but you know, there's no amount of surface conversations that you can have with somebody and get this deep without asking about the adversity that they've faced. And so I'm just really thankful that you are so willing and so vulnerable in sharing the tough stuff that you've been through. I really want to thank you for that.
No, I'm grateful that I went through it, and it gives me some tools every day that I'm able to do a better job at work and help some people and be a better dad. I'm grateful.
Yeah. And I can totally see your heart and the purpose behind why it is that you're so passionate about helping kids, you know, stay in sports. It's not just about the sport itself. It's about the family, the camaraderie, the lessons that you learn, the support that you have outside of the home, and, you know, keeping you out of trouble and on the right path. So thank you so much for all that you're doing for the kids in our community. I just really want to applaud you for that. And I have one last question for you.
Okay.
You ready?
Uh-huh.
Doug, what does fulfillment mean to you?
I don't know. I guess that's a tough question. I was not ready for that.
That's okay. Just whatever comes to mind. There's no right or wrong answers to this.
Well, fulfillment for me has been obviously just about to be with my wife and kids and understand that we love each other and that we would do anything for each other and that we've done the absolute best we could together. I wouldn't trade the relationship I have with my wife or kids, and watching my kids grow up and have the same kind of feelings towards things that me and my wife had, and chasing those same sort of things with the same kind of passion that we did. I don't know if I could feel any more fulfilled than that.
That's beautiful. Doug, thank you again so very much for sharing your story, and I wish you the very best that life has to offer.
Sure. Can I throw one last thing out there?
Yes, please. Yes.
Okay. So I will tell you the last couple of months with the school board and the schools and sports and Eastern Idaho Public Health and COVID and our community is the hardest thing for me has been having all these talented people that have somehow decided to choose a side of where they land in the world that's going on right now. And And we have treated each other poorly. And we have fought against each other. And we have never been able to look past ourselves to understand the impact that it's having on the kids in our community. I don't know exactly what the right thing to do with everything is, but I truly do believe if we took all the talented people from all the different sides that they're standing on and we put them in a room together and we all got on the same path, that we could do some amazing things. I think that it would make our community, I think COVID is an opportunity to make our community stronger than it's ever been before. But it's going to take everybody. It's going to take everybody to be open-minded and to look past just what they believe and come together. And I would trade all my businesses, anything that I do, I would trade that if that would happen tomorrow.
And you know, I believe you wholeheartedly when you say that too, Doug. You've really put yourself on the line with the kids' best interests at heart. And there was actually a quote that I read today that just really falls in line with what you're talking about. And it says, "Healthy debates are natural, but kindness is our currency."
Yeah.
And it is, we're all going through unprecedented times where we don't know exactly what the right answers are. And I think that's where it's so important that we rely on each other's support to come up with a great conclusion on how we can be unified in helping our kids. So I want to thank you again for your heart, your effort. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or talk about?
I hope everybody owns a business out there is fighting a good fight, hanging in there, and we're going to have plenty of bumps in the road. We're going to have to figure out how to support each other locally. So I'm certainly all in to help anybody I can. And I would certainly like to expect the same thing back.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all in this together. Doug, thank you again so very much.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of The Fulfilled Life with Ming Ming. If anything you heard was inspiring or resonated with you, please subscribe, leave a review, and share this with your friends and family. I'm Christine Ming Ming Garner. I'll see you in the next episode. Until then, always remember, fulfillment is your birthright.